Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and we have Paul Venable, and we're going to dive further into the election of delegates for the 1787 Constitutional Convention. In other words, the states are providing the guidance after they've selected who is going to represent them. So it doesn't look like there was an open election where the people chose. The state legislature basically grabbed who they thought would be their faithful representatives to take care of business. And okay. So we left off with Georgia, and Georgia actually had some real reservations. Now, Maryland is the next one. And so go ahead and you know what? Look at when Maryland did this.
26 May 1787. So the convention had already started.
Yes.
In fact, I pulled up a calendar for 1787, and I found that, where is it? There it is. And I found that May of 1787, let's see, the 26th of May, okay, the 14th was the second Monday. The 26th was almost 2 weeks later. Okay, so These delegates didn't show up right away.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at, I think, Madison's notes on the convention was delayed because, you know, people were late showing up to the dance.
Right.
Okay.
So here we are in Maryland. Act electing and empowering delegates, 26 May 1787. An act for the appointment of and conferring powers in deputies from this state to the federal convention. Be it enacted by the General Assembly of Maryland that the Honorable James McHenry, Daniel of St. Thomas Jennifer, Daniel Carroll, John Francis Mercer, and Luther Martin, Esquires, be appointed and authorized on behalf of this state to meet such deputies as may be appointed and authorized by any other of the United States to assemble in convention at Philadelphia for the purpose of revising the federal system, and to join with them in considering such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary to render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of the Union. And in reporting such an act for that purpose to the United States in Congress assembled, as one agreed to by them and duly confirmed by the several states, will effectually provide for the same, and the said deputies or such of them as shall attend the said convention shall have full power to represent this state for the purposes aforesaid, and the said deputies are hereby directed to report the proceedings of the said convention and any act agreed to therein to the next session of the General Assembly of this state.
Okay, so the key words there, and I've kind of highlighted in green, be appointed and are authorized on behalf of this state to meet such deputies as may be appointed. You okay?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I just heard a big blast of wind on your microphone. So, anyway, so... Let me keep saying this. To meet such deputies as may be appointed and authorized by any other of the United States to assemble in convention at Philadelphia. And here's the important part, folks. For the purpose of revising the federal system and to join with them in considering such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary to render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigency of the Union. So did it seem like they were holding their hands and saying, okay, we only want you to touch these things or only consider those things?
Not in the least.
Not in the least. There were no reservations at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in other words, this was... you know, a blank check. So out of the Connecticut, Delaware, Georgia, Massachusetts, and Maryland, out of the first five that we've gone through, only two states had unique qualifications that pointed to the fifth article of the Articles of Confederation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the amendment process. That's just, you know, very specific things within Article 5. Because the amendment process was the 13th article.
Correct.
Anyway, okay, so now we move to North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina.
Yep.
An act authorizing the election of delegates, 6th January, 1787. An act for appointing deputies from this state to a convention proposed to be held in the city of Philadelphia in May next for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. Whereas in the formation of the federal compact, which frames the bond of union of the American states, it was not possible in the infant state of our republics to devise a system which in the course of time and experience would not manifest imperfections that it would be necessary to reform. And whereas the limited powers which by the Articles of Confederation are vested in the Congress of the United States have been found far inadequate to the enlarged purposes which they were intended to produce, and whereas Congress hath, by repeated and most urgent representations, endeavored to awaken this and the other states of the Union to a sense of the truly critical and alarming situation into which they must be unavoidably cast, unless measures are forthwith taken to enlarge the powers of Congress, that they may thereby be enabled to avert the dangers which threaten our existence as a free and independent people, and whereas this state hath been ever desirous to act upon the enlarged system of the general good of the United States without bounding its views to the narrow and selfish object of partial convenience, and has been at all times ready to make every concession to the safety and happiness of the whole which justice and sound policy could vindicate. You know, before I get okay to the instructions, wow.
Right. I mean, they're basically saying it is not good. It is not, all is not well in Denmark.
Right.
Or like I said the other day.
In America, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or like I said the other day, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore, folks.
Right.
And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, they just made it really clear we're going to do something different and we need to do it quickly. So here's one. Be it therefore enacted by the General Assembly of the State of North Carolina and by the authority of the same, that five commissioners be appointed by joint ballot of both houses of assembly who, or any three of them, are hereby authorized as deputies from this state to meet at Philadelphia on the first day of May next, then and there to meet and confer with such deputies as may be appointed by the other states for similar purposes, and with them to discuss and decide upon the most effectual means to remove the defects of our federal union and to procure the enlarged purposes which it was intended to effect, and that they report such an act to the General Assembly of this state as, when agreed to by them, will effectually provide for the same. Be it further enacted that in case of the death or resignation of any of the said deputies, or of their declining their appointments, His Excellency the Governor, for the time being, is hereby authorized to supply such vacancies, and the Governor is required to transmit forthwith a copy of this act to the United States and Congress assembled, and to the executives of each of the states in the Union. So, okay. North Carolina pulls no punches here.
And any reservations?
None, whatever.
And again, the emphasized part, to meet and confer with such deputies as may be appointed by the other states for similar purposes, and with them to discuss and decide upon the most effectual means to remove the defects of our federal union and to procure the enlarged purposes which it is intended to effect. So, in other words, they actually used different language than every other state. They didn't talk right about the exigencies. They basically said, go do what's necessary and procure, you know, what is necessary to give us this intended effect.
All right. So far, tell me, where is this runaway convention?
Well, so that's the whole point, that when the states actually told their delegates to go off and do this, what they wrote down, You know, unless you actually have it on YouTube, that there was a lot of wink winks and nods nods, you know, like you ever heard somebody say, I would never do that, while they're, you know, both basically, you know, bouncing their head up and down like they're saying, yes, I would. Yes, I would. But, yeah. Oh, I'd never do that. Right. You right. know, it's anyway.
Well, so New Hampshire's next.
Okay. Yay.
An act empowering delegates, 27 June 1787. This is June, GR.
Yep.
This is the end of June.
Okay.
An act for appointing deputies from this state to the convention proposed to be held in the city of Philadelphia in May 1787 for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. Whereas in the formation of the federal compact, which frames the bond of union of the American states, it was not possible in the infant state of our republic to devise a system which in the course of time and experience would not manifest imperfections that would be necessary to reform. Actually, New Hampshire sounds a little bit like North Carolina, doesn't it?
Yep.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And whereas the limited powers which by the Articles of Confederation are vested in the Congress of the United States, which, no, have been found far inadequate to the enlarged purposes which they were intended to produce, and whereas Congress hath, by repeated and most urgent representations, endeavored to awaken this and other states in the Union to a sense of the truly critical and alarming situation in which they may inevitably be involved, unless timely measures be taken to enlarge the powers of Congress, that they may thereby be enabled to avert the dangers which threaten our existence as a free and independent people, and whereas this state hath been ever desirous to act upon the liberal system of the general good of the United States without circumscribing its views to the narrow and selfish objects of partial convenience, and has been at all times ready to make every concession to the safety and happiness of the whole which justice and sound policy could vindicate. I want to stop here for just a minute.
Uh-huh.
It actually sounds like they copied in North Carolina.
In many ways, yes. And so there a month later, there's a good likelihood that New Hampshire, for the record, so they could have said, you know what, we like this more. They could have actually sent. And so what you have to do is you have to look at the rolls when the delegates actually showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wouldn't put past the state legislature. Remember, states kind of behave badly. You know, they took some latitude, right? And I wouldn't put mm-hmm. it past, you know, a state legislature basically of, hey, we like the language of this one, so we're gonna use this and actually, you know, 86, the old one, like it didn't even exist.
In other words, send their delegates, but then change the
send their delegates their and then forward this, you know, information to them. Okay, here's further guidance from us. There you go.
Okay. Because, so, right. Because North Carolina did theirs in January and with instructions to submit it to the other states. So New Hampshire obviously had this. Okay, so I'll go down to the next paragraph. Be it therefore enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives in general court convened that John Langdon, John Pickering, Nicholas Gilman, and Benjamin West Esquires be and hereby are appointed commissioners. They or any two of them are hereby authorized and empowered as deputies from the state to meet in Philadelphia said convention, or any other place to which the said convention may be adjourned for the purposes aforesaid, there to confer with such deputies as are or may be appointed by the other states for similar purposes, and with them to discuss and decide upon the most effectual means to remedy the defects of our federal union and to procure and secure the enlarged purposes which it was intended to effect, and to report such an act to the United States in Congress as when agreed by them and duly confirmed by the several states will effectually provide for the same. Okay.
Okay, so yes, even what they said here is very, very similar to what North Carolina said.
Okay.
Yeah, I it's my opinion that they basically took that and go, this really speaks to us. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Now, New Jersey was very succinct and to the point.
Sure. So, New Jersey. Resolution authorizing and empowering the delegates, 24 November 1786. Resolved that the Honorable David Barely, William C. Houston, William Patterson and John Nielsen Esquires, commissioners appointed on the part of this state or any three of them, be and they hereby are authorized and empowered to meet such commissioners as have been or may be appointed by the other states in the Union at the city of Philadelphia in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on the second Monday of May next for the purpose of taking into consideration the state of the Union as to trade and other important objects and of devising such further provisions as shall appear necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies thereof. Short and to the point.
Okay, so but you didn't mention the date.
Oh, the date, yeah, 24 November 1786, which was like almost immediately after.
Four months before Continental Congress came along and said, we need to do this.
Mm.
In other words, they were already ready because they knew how bad it was.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Here's New York. Wow, they're a little bit longer, but here we go. 26-28 February 1787, resolved, if the Honorable, okay, this was in the House of Delegates, Assembly and Senate authorized election of delegates, resolved, if the Honorable, the Senate concur herein, that five delegates be appointed on the part of this state to meet such delegates as may be appointed on the part of the other states, respectively, on the second Monday in May next at Philadelphia, for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and to the several legislatures such alterations and provisions herein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the several states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union, and that in case of such concurrence, the two houses of the legislature will meet on Thursday next at such place as the Honorable the Senate shall think proper for the purpose of electing the said delegates by joint ballot. Ordered that Mr. John Livingston deliver a copy of the last preceding resolution to the Honorable the Senate. The Senate, 26 February, ordered that the consideration of the said resolution be postponed until tomorrow. The Senate, 27 February, resolved that the Senate do not concur with the Honorable the Assembly and their said resolution. Ordered that Mr. Williams deliver a copy of the preceding resolution of non-concurrence to the Honorable the Assembly. The Senate, 28 February, a resolution was offered which copied the House resolution of 28 February, which copied the resolution of 26 February, except for two changes. One, the election was to be held on the following Tuesday instead of Thursday, and two, the delegates were to be elected in the manner provided by the state constitution for the election of delegates to Congress, that is, by the two houses balloting separately rather than jointly. Which resolution having been read, Mr. Herring moved that instead of five, that three delegates be appointed for the purposes set forth in the said resolution. Debates arose. And the question being put therein, it was carried in the affirmative in manner following. For the affirmative, Mr. Yates, Mr. Treadwell, Mr. Herring, Mr. Ward, Mr. Russell, and Mr. Hopkins, Mr. Startwout, Mr. Hawthorne, Mr. Humphrey, Mr. Parks, Mr. Williams. For the negative, Mr. Stoutenburg, Mr. Vanderbilt, Mr. Townsend, Mr. Morris, Mr. Peter Schuyler, Mr. Lamadou, Mr. Philip Schuyler. Mr. Herring then moved to expunge after the words Tuesday next to the end of the resolution and to substitute the following, viz., quote, meet at such place as the Honorable the Assembly shall think proper for the purpose of electing the said delegates by joint ballot, close quote. Debates arose, and the question being put thereon, it was carried in the negative in manner following. For the negative, for the affirmative, do you mind if I just skip
these? No, so it's okay to skip these. Probably want best to get down to the resolve part. But here's interesting. Have you noticed the exclusion of Hamilton? This is New York, right?
Yes, it is New York. And yes, I don't see his name on here.
Not once yet has his name even been mentioned. So how did that little creature make it to the convention? Okay, go ahead. Read the result.
Okay. Resolved. If the Honorable the Assembly concur herein, that 3 delegates be appointed on the part of this state to meet such delegates as may be appointed on the part of the other states respectively on the second Monday in May at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation.
Okay.
And report, and that's what they're saying. And reporting to Congress and to the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the several states, render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the union.
Okay. So what happened to the language that New York submitted to the Continental Congress?
Well, it does say sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation, and then it adds this language to the several such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the several states, render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the union. So what's going on in New York? Okay. They've got, it sounds like they've got both provisions, but they...
The final provision actually allowed the freedom of the delegates to do what they felt necessary.
Right. In concurrence with the rest of the states and Congress.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Okay. And that in case of such concurrence, the two houses of the legislature will on Tuesday next proceed to nominate and appoint the said delegates in like manner as is directed by the Constitution of the state for nominating and appointing delegates to Congress. Or that Mr. Williams, okay. So I'm going to move down. The House do concur with the Honorable Senate in the said resolution. Mr. Dungan, deliver a copy. Okay, so it doesn't tell us who they chose to be the delegates.
But we clearly noted that Hamilton was not even in the picture. So how did he show up?
I don't know. Do you have any?
No, I mean, this is just one of those things. While you were reading, I was kind of taking the liberty of going, what? Okay, Yates, I recognize Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, right. John Jay was, I believe, one of the delegates. Livingston Jay and actually, no, Yates was the secretary, wasn't he?
Okay.
Right? Wasn't it Yates that was the official secretary that failed? I mean, he lost parts of the records. And I mean,
he did?
Yeah. Madison, so the real records of the Constitutional Convention came out of Madison's notes, was not the secretary of the convention.
Right.
Interesting. Something. Anyway, nevertheless, now we go into Pennsylvania.
Okay. Just a minute. Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. An act of, let's see, this is...
Well, so you know what? I know we're heading into a break here. We got less than a minute. And
okay.
just for everybody's grins, I did highlight a name out of here, George Clymer, and because this is Pennsylvania, and
right.
the chair of the Constitution Party happens to be Jim Clymer, James Clymer, right?
Yes, and I have asked him if he is related to this George Clymer. I asked him that some years ago.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't seem to think so, but I'm going to pursue the question again.
Yeah, I mean, what's the coincidence? I mean, is it a coincidence? And I don't think so, especially out of the same state.
Yes, correct.
Lawyers. I mean, if he comes from a family of lawyers, because these were all esquires, right?
Right. So far, every one of them were esquires.
Okay. Right. So with that, folks, we're going to dive into a quick promo. And when we come back, we'll actually go through the Pennsylvania enactments or basically the selecting of the delegates and empowering them. And so we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
Yeah. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just address one thing, because I think that sometimes people go, well, why are you going into all of this detail? It is very disingenuous if I just highlighted the one parts that we want you to hear and read. I mean, so we try to make sure we cover enough of the context so that there's no misconception or misconstruction of what we're trying to assert here. And so it is paramount that, you know, as we point our finger of judgment towards these people who like to take these little quotations and take them out of context. And this actually has happened, folks, because we actually tell, we hear from people that like to cite. And what, you know, are you back with us, by the way, Paul?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. So remember when we were reading the notes on nullification, and I read, and I emphasized this, that those who were advocates of single state nullification are really quick to point out that, you know, this little line that Madison says, yeah, Jefferson does say that it's every state's right to be able to nullify any federal law. And then they leave it there. Like, that's all he said. But he goes on and says, but nobody would deny, or, you know, if Jefferson himself would deny the fact that any state could remain in the Union after nullifying a federal law. In other words, you know, they take what they want and they construe this to say, oh, well, see, Madison supports nullification, so did Jefferson.
And the challenge for me is, GR, why they don't tell the whole story when it's right in the documents.
Well, so actually the real truth is that Jefferson and Madison did not support nullification, because the question lies, what did they do? Did they nullify or did they try to interpose?
Well, they tried to interpose.
And they, you know, did not nullify, as they decided not to nullify. So how can you say that they even supported it?
Well, and it was apparent. I mean, you and I read Madison's notes on nullification, and they were so, I mean, he was animated.
Uh-huh. Yes, he was.
Later in his life, and he was animated against single state nullification.
Right.
I mean, it's like he repeated himself over and over again.
Yes.
And so I still come to the question that, you know, and I mean, it's hard not to point fingers when you ask the question, but why, with these documents available, can you disagree with the founders?
Right. And actually, let me get into this very specifically, because I believe it was in the 40s. Yeah, it was paragraph 44. I pulled it up real quick. And it says, thus the right, this is what they quote, this is the line that they quote, thus the right of nullification meant by Mr. Jefferson is the natural right which all admit to be a remedy against insupportable oppression, period. Next sentence in the same paragraph, it cannot be supposed for a moment that Mr. Jefferson would not revolt at the doctrine of South Carolina that a single state could constitutionally resist a law of the Union whilst remaining within it. And the whole point is that Mr. Jefferson and Mr. Madison did not exert nullification to the Alien and Sedition Acts. They demanded interposition.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that they completely misrepresent what these guys were saying and doing? Because it fits their narrative. They don't care about solving the problem. They're wanting to contribute to the chaos that is being caused.
That's first of all, that's really hard to be. That's hard to imagine. Forgive me, but you know that's hard to imagine that there is any benefit to contributing to the chaos, unless maybe they're really ignorant of the real intent of the founders.
Well, so you know many of these men in these organizations, or at least you've heard of, and these guys come across as people that really do know inside and out, forwards and backwards, you know, these documents and so forth. They come across and they, you know, I think they have a, you know, a little puffiness to themselves to say, you know, I am an authority. And I don't think they are. I think that they're using credentials that lack any veracity.
Right. It's, you know, the 10th Amendment Center comes to mind, and it's nullification is, it pounds on that concept.
Yes.
Pounds on it.
Yes.
Okay?
And so
else does that is
the John Birch Society, and as a matter of fact, I think the Eagle Forum, because they just have a complete reliance upon the John Birch Society, they just kind of have gone along with it and have agreed. Because as I've talked to presidents of the Eagle Forum, they kind of go, you know what, GR, you're right.
Okay.
But I've only been able to talk to, you know, a couple.
Right.
Out of the three that I've talked to, two out of the three agree with me. The third one is not necessarily objective. They've already had a closed mind about this, and they've already prejudged me, probably based on something else I don't know. But bottom line, I do know that, you know, anybody that's objective, when you really look at the facts, how can you walk away with this idea that Jefferson and Madison supported this, and that's a real process, or that's even a mechanism of potential salvation or something that can really solve the problem? As I stand firm that nullification nullification has zero chance of solving the problem that it's addressing. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually address the problem. It basically, it's the cheap and easy way out. It's kind of like you have a problem in your marriage, so I'm just going to ignore it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to follow that or deal with it. And that's very problematic, folks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So it's well, I'm still baffled what's the gain out of not sharing the whole picture. You know, I mean, Tom Woods is another one who pounds on nullification. We can go on, but I think, if we follow the founders, then their message is clear. In fact, I think it's one of those things, the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions, I think things happened back then that are providential that we have for precedent today. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And if it weren't for the Alien Sedition Acts and what Jefferson and Madison did, we wouldn't have the pattern that they put together that really makes up what we call Republic Review.
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, these men were... if you want to call them lightning rods, I mean, they were the center of, you know, understanding how to deal with some of the problems that were already surfacing in the early days.
Right.
Because they were already fighting. And, you know, Jefferson was duped by basically making the concession for the Assumption Act and getting the land a speculation that he was hoping for, because within 2 years after that Assumption Act, they realized that they had made a huge mistake because of the creation of the National Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so there's no doubt in my mind. You know, these guys said, you know what, we can't trust that guy anymore.
They're talking about
Hamilton. Yeah,
we're talking about Hamilton, right?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So anyway, now we kind of, I think we left off before we went into break with Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania is kind of a little details here, but you know, let's go ahead and get into the section two.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Section two. Be it enacted, and it is hereby enacted by the representatives of the freemen of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in General Assembly met, and by the authority of the same, that Thomas Mifflin, Robert Morris, George Clymer, Jared Ingersoll, Thomas Fitzsimmons, James Wilson, and Gouverneur Morris Esquires are hereby appointed deputies from this state to meet in the convention of the deputies of the respective states of North America, to be held at the city of Philadelphia on the second day, on the second day of the month of May next. They didn't get that right. And the said Thomas Mifflin, Robert Morris, George Clymer, Jared Ingersoll, Thomas Fitzsimmons, James Wilson, and Gouverneur Morris Esquires, or any four of them, are hereby constituted and appointed deputies from this state with powers to meet such deputies as may be appointed and authorized by the other states to assemble in the said convention at the city aforesaid, and to join with them in devising, deliberating on, and discussing all such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary to render the federal constitution fully adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and in reporting such act or acts for that purpose to the United States and Congress assembled, as when agreed to by them and duly confirmed by the several states, will effectively provide for the same.
Okay, so they actually include and discussing all such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary. So there's really no reservations whatsoever in Pennsylvania. And so far, we've only had two states out of the, well, we're not going to cover, so out of the 13.
Okay.
Right, we've only read 10. This is the 10th out of 13. Okay. So, in other words, it's 8-2?
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And again, just to caveat it, those two states, Georgia and Massachusetts, those two states, you know, still gave them the necessary power to deal with, you know, and to render a federal constitution capable of dealing with the exigencies of the Union. Well, but they just had these caveats. We don't want you to touch anything in Article 5.
Right. Okay. Okay.
All right.
So, question, Section 3 is just for, you know, the replacement of them if they're, if they die or refuse their nomination, that's the same as the others. Can we go down to South Carolina?
Yeah. You know, that's why I just said, let's just deal with that Section 2. Now, okay. South Carolina, now, just remember that North Carolina really did set the tone with their Enabling Act, right?
Okay, right.
And... but South Carolina, who actually did their Enabling Act, one of the things I guess I should have done, instead of putting these things in alphabetical order, I should have probably put them in chronological order, because whoever sends the first one out, the other states see that and go, oh, okay, so now we know who's going to be attending from this state, you know, and we can find out who's copying who.
Right, okay.
Anyway.
So, here we go. South Carolina, an act for appointing deputies from the state of South Carolina to a convention of the United States of America proposing to be held at in the city of Philadelphia in the month of May, 1787, for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. Whereas the powers at present vested in the United States and Congress assembled by the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union of said states are found by experience greatly inadequate to the weighty purposes they were originally intended to answer, and it has become absolutely necessary to the welfare of the Confederate States that other and more ample powers in certain cases should be vested in and exercised by the said United States in Congress assembled, and also that the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union of the United States should be revised in order to remedy defects which at their original formation in the time of war and general tumult could not be foreseen nor sufficiently provided against. And whereas this state is and ever hath been ready and willing to cooperate with the other states in the Union in devising and adopting such measures as will most effectually ensure the peace and general welfare of the Confederacy, be it enacted by the Honorable the Senate and House of Representatives, now met and sitting in General Assembly, and by the authority of the same, that five commissioners be forthwith appointed by joint ballot of the Senate and the House of Representatives, who or any three or more of them being first duly commissioned by His Excellency the Governor, for the time being under his hand in the great seal of the state, by virtue of this act, shall be and are hereby authorized as deputies from the state, to meet such deputies or commissioners as may be appointed and authorized by other of the United States to assemble in convention at the city of Philadelphia in the month of May next, after passing this act, or as soon thereafter as may be, and to join with such deputies and commissioners, they being duly authorized and empowered in devising and discussing all such alterations, clauses, articles, and provisions as may be thought necessary to render the federal Constitution entirely adequate to the actual situation and future good government of the Confederated States, and that the said deputies or commissioners or a majority of those who shall be present, provided the state be not represented by less than two, do join in reporting such an act to the United States in Congress assembled as when approved and agreed to by them, and duly ratified and confirmed by the several states, will effectually provide for the exigencies of the Union. In the Senate House, the 8th of March, in the year of our Lord, 1787, and in the 11th year of the independence of the United States of America, John Lloyd, President, John Julius Pringle, Speaker, President of the Senate and Speaker of the House.
Okay, so it seems to me that South Carolina took a different tone, and North Carolina and New Hampshire kind of followed in suit. Okay. Because they're the ones that actually, for the first time, really talked about the wholly inadequacy, you know, in the whereas the powers present vested in, you know, and are founded greatly inadequate to the weighty purpose they were originally intended. I mean, they go on and on. And you know, so I think South Carolina clearly set that tone. And I think North Carolina just put a, you know, a better refined spin to it. I think New Hampshire decided to kind of follow in suit.
Kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Right?
But obviously, because this was the 8th of March, this was well before North Carolina, because North Carolina was what, the third Monday of May, or almost, you know, a week late, you said? And then New Hampshire was about a month and a half late.
Well, North Carolina was earlier. I mean, it was, hang on, let me go really quick. When was MNO?
Oh, North Carolina was January 6th. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
So I thought that, okay, so New Hampshire, which followed, that was in June.
Right. New Hampshire was a month and a half.
Okay, so I stand corrected. North Carolina set the tone. South Carolina kind of copied that, and then New Hampshire followed more in line with how North Carolina did it. I mean, it was pretty closer copy than following the South Carolina, version of North Carolina's.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So now we're in Virginia, the last one, right?
Uh-huh.
An act authorizing the election of delegates 23 November 1786. They took the jump start. An act for appointing deputies from this commonwealth to a convention proposed to be held in the city of Philadelphia in May next for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. Section 1. Whereas the commissioners who assembled at Annapolis on the 14th day of September last for the purpose of devising and reporting the means of enabling Congress to provide effectually for the commercial interests of the United States have represented the necessity of extending the revision of the federal system to all its defects and have recommended that deputies for that purpose be appointed by the several legislatures to meet in convention in the city of Philadelphia on the second day of May next, a provision which seems preferable to a discussion of the subject in Congress where it might be too much interrupted by the ordinary business before them, and where it would besides be deprived of the valuable counsels of sundry individuals who are disqualified by the Constitution or laws of particular states or restrained by peculiar circumstances from a seat in that assembly. And whereas the General Assembly of this Commonwealth, taking into view the actual situation of the Confederacy, as well as reflecting on the alarming representations made from time to time by the United States in Congress, particularly in their act of the 15th day of February last, I don't know what that is, but I'll go on, can no longer doubt that the crisis is arrived at which the good people of America are to decide the solemn question whether they will be wise and magnanimous efforts reap the just fruits of that independence which they have so gloriously acquired and of that union which they have cemented with so much of their common blood, or whether by giving way to unmanly jealousies and prejudices or to partial and transitory interests, they will renounce the auspicious blessings prepared for them by the Revolution and furnish to its enemies an eventual triumph over those by whose virtue and valor it has been accomplished. And whereas the same noble and extended policy of the same federal and fraternal and affectionate sentiments which originally determined the citizens of this Commonwealth to unite with their brethren of the other states in establishing a federal government cannot be but felt with equal force now as motives to lay aside every inferior consideration and to concur in such further concessions and provisions as may be necessary to secure the great objects for which that government was instituted and to render the United States as happy in peace as they have been glorious in war. Section 2. Be it therefore enacted by the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Virginia that 7 commissioners be appointed by joint ballot of both houses of assembly, who or any 3 of them are hereby authorized as deputies from this Commonwealth to meet such deputies as may be appointed and authorized by other states to assemble in convention at Philadelphia as above recommended, and to join with them in devising and discussing all such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary to render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and in reporting such an act for that purpose to the United States in Congress as when agreed to by them and duly confirmed by the several states will effectually provide for the same. Section 3. And be it further enacted that in case of the death of any of the said deputies or of their declining their appointments, the executive are hereby authorized to supply such vacancies. And the governor is requested to transmit forthwith a copy of this act to the United States in Congress and to the executives of each of the states in the Union. Virginia had its own language.
Oh, yeah. And you got to remember that when we look at who the delegates were, and I guess the best document that we have is the actual Constitution, because the Constitution identifies at the very end, right after Article 7, it has the signatures and who was sent from each of the states. Mm-hmm. And so New Hampshire had Langdon and Gilman. Massachusetts had Gorman and King. In other words, some of these delegates, because some of these states actually sent 3. Connecticut, Johnson and Sherman. Alexander Hamilton. And then New Jersey was Livingston, Beerley, Peterson, and Dayton. Hamilton wasn't even listed there. That was Jersey. Okay. New York was Alexander Hamilton by himself. So we know that Livingston was there, and I believe Yates was there.
Okay.
So these are just those men, if I'm correct, this is those men who actually signed the Constitution. So that's why you see these names present. And so Rutledge was there, let me go back up. So New York, Connecticut, we had Johnson and Sherman. New York was Hamilton. And then New Jersey had Livingston, Beardsley, Patterson, Dayton, and then Pennsylvania, almost all of the delegates signed the Constitution. Franklin, Mifflin, Morris, mm-hmm. Clymer, Simmons, right. Ingersoll. So the reason I'm doing this is just to point out the states that actually sent the larger body of delegates mm-hmm. had better influence in these conventions, even though
right.
the state had only one vote. In other words, it wasn't all seven again. You know, it wasn't a one for all. Each right. state voted as a delegation. They got one yes or one no. I mean, that was it. And right. so when they formed committees, if they had lots of different committees to put people into, you know, the state that only sent one or two delegates did not have adequate representation throughout the committees.
Right.
So they had less influence in steering the committees. I believe that it bodes better to have an adequate representation instead of minimal.
Okay.
And the states that sent minimal had the least amount of influence in, you know, guiding and, you know, ensuring that we were getting the best we could get.
Mm-hmm.
You mean, if you just left it to Hamilton, it would have all been, you know, really bad.
Right.
And so my point, and I just trying to emphasize this, is that when we look at, you know, state constitutional conventions and actually county constitutional conventions, it's hard when you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen. You just have to keep in mind that, like, when you form a county constitutional convention to write a constitution, you got to break it down to whatever those basic elements are, not by the precinct committeeman, because that really moves you towards a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to, you know, create subdivisions of the county that will be groupings of the precincts. In other words, go ahead.
Well, oftentimes, you know, counties are historically are broken up into townships. And what has swallowed up townships is the growth of large cities. But usually, even in the early times, the plat maps had plats in townships, and so they were divided that way. And in fact, I believe my county still uses townships. So, you know, that's one way of having, you know, groupings of precincts, like you suggested.
Right. Right. So if you're really rural, you know, then the townships will actually drown out the bulk of the people. If you're really rural, let's say you only have two towns in your entire county, just two major towns, and then everybody else is just out there. You know, what it does is it actually silences. So you really need to look, because it could be very problematic allowing the townships to have that kind of control, because, you know, the towns may be the shops and the commerce and maybe some factories, but let's say you have agricultural interest in this county, you know, mm-hmm. you have a lot of farms, or maybe it's lumber, or maybe it's fishing, you know, mm-hmm. you want to make sure that every interest is represented. Don't let anybody marginalize the importance of that interest.
Right.
And this is the reason why the states maintained representation, and why within the states, the counties maintained until this unconstitutional swipe or left hand from the Supreme Court, where they, you know, took away county representation in the state Senate. So, folks, I just wanted to impress upon you that sending more delegates for each of your areas within the county would be good, but just keep in mind that it needs to be weighted so that, you know, everything is voted with one vote yes, one vote no. That's it. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.